comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. I know you could be doing a million other things tonight, but you've chosen to be here, and I want you to know I appreciate it. It's talk radio like nowhere else on Earth. It's the show where you matter. Don't forget to subscribe to the K-Files. If you haven't done that, it's our free weekly newsletter. Just check my website there and click on the link that says K-Files and subscribe. It's free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and there's no genius in sitting in the dark. So you go ahead and subscribe. Now, you'll get a confirmation email, and in that email is a link for you to activate your subscription. If you don't use that link and activate your subscription, you won't get the K-Files, okay? So we do that to make sure we don't spam anybody. Those of you who are either listening or watching the show at my website tonight have noticed that it's not our regular website. Late this afternoon, it's been really, for about the past 2 or 3 weeks, the thing has, it's been, sometimes it'll load very fast, and sometimes it takes forever, and sometimes it won't load at all, and that's not my website, nor is it the hosting company. That is something out there on the Comcast network, and we know that because, we actually know where that's happening. We know where it with the route that you have to go to get to my website. Now, some of you don't use Comcast, so it's not a problem, and some of you do use Comcast, but you're in a different part of the country, so it's not a problem. But for a large number of people, it's been a problem. And so this afternoon, just really about 2 hours before showtime, it just went dead. So there's a big chunk of the United States that could not see or hear my show if they were trying to get to my website. So what we've done is what you're looking at, if you've gone to kevinsmithshow.com, you're looking at a completely different temporary website on a completely different host, different server, different part of the country. And we'll be back in our home hopefully tomorrow. If we're not, we'll just move everything over here and operate from here. But and we got a few more places we can operate from. But you should be able, with this temporary site, to both see and hear the show. And I hope you are enjoying it. Because of the fact that it's a temporary site, we are the Kevin Smith Show television channel is not in the members area tonight. It's free tonight, so go ahead and enjoy it and see what you've been missing. And maybe that will inspire you to become one of the people who stands with us and helps us to continue broadcasting and bringing you the information others will not talk about. We'll be back right after this. You know, with all the really massive blizzard conditions prevailing around so much of the United States right at this moment. And with the skyrocketing oil prices and the resulting skyrocketing prices for fuel for your car, and all of that is due to the revolution in Egypt, the futuristic sciences of alternative power sources are very high on the list for many Americans right now, and really, not just for Americans, but for everyone around the world. My guest tonight is a man who has been at the leading edge of developing alternative energy sources and alternative power systems. Dr. Brooks Agnew is a best-selling author, engineer, inventor, explorer, entrepreneur, radio host, and a few other things. Dr. Agnew, welcome back to the show.
Well, I appreciate that so much. I like most being a guest on the Kevin Smith Show. That's my biggest claim to fame, I think.
Oh, well, thank you. You know just the right things to say, don't you? How have you been? We've missed you here on the show.
Well, I've been very busy. Lots of things happening, you know. All those things that you just described, the pressures of weather, of very, very strange weather anomalies and extremes all around the planet, of politics and the social pressures of, you know, people trying to wonder how they're going to take care of their families and their countries, for that matter, have all had an effect on the price, the availability, the stability of gasoline, of oil, of diesel fuel. And we've all felt it right in our pocketbooks. And I guess the strangest thing about it is that although we've heard, you know, reams and reams of rhetoric from the administration and from other political figures in our country about how they're going to support the bringing forth of this new technology, whether it's breakthrough power generation or electric vehicles or power grids or energy-saving devices for the home, through the implementation and availability of government grants and stimulus funds, none of that has come to pass.
Well, that's what I want to get into tonight. Because, you know, when I was talking with you earlier in the week, we talked a little bit about what you have been through, and we're going to get into that in some depth here tonight. But I think, first of all, that we need to say for our listeners around the world, and I'm sure it's got to be this way in a lot of other places around the world, here in the United States of America, we say that the way you can tell if a politician is lying is if his lips are moving. And
yes, he's lying really badly if one of his hands is moving while his mouth is moving.
Well, that's right. That's right. And there are people who say, well, that's anti-government. No, it's anti-liars.
Yeah, really.
I'm not against the government. I'm against the lying hijackers that have taken it over. But the way that you can tell if a politician is lying in this country is if he's speaking. And if he's speaking, you can pretty much count on it. Now, they got up and blew all this smoke about how they were going to rescue the economy. Maybe they can justify saying they rescued the economy if they count the fact that the only people who really got rescued were the people who were already rich, and who really didn't need to be rescued. And you know, not only were they already rich and didn't need to be rescued, a whole bunch of them took home multi-million-dollar bonuses for bringing us the largest number of home foreclosures in the history of the country, record numbers of people having to go bankrupt, record numbers of people being thrown out of their jobs, groveling just to get by. If that's rescuing the economy, then okay, I guess they can lay claim to rescuing it. Now, that's not a political statement, because both parties participated in that. It's a blanket statement about the lying air coming out of Washington, D.C. Now, having said that, specifically applied to alternative energies and breakthrough technologies and talking about we're going to a green economy. Ladies and gentlemen, there's been much, much air coming out of Washington, D.C. about that. Polluted air, but air nonetheless, hot air. And we're not seeing that happen. What we are seeing is that the actions of Washington, D.C. have served actually to crush and steamroll innovation. Now, that's what I want to talk about. Because we're all interested in these futuristic sciences that could be being used by us right now. Dr. Agnew, you've been involved in the development of biofuels, and you are also involved in the development of electric vehicles. Now, I want to get into the electric vehicles tonight. Tell us a little bit about the vehicles and what your relationship is to those vehicles.
Okay, I can start there. I really wanted to pick up on that question about how they were crushing the innovative technologies, but we'll get into that.
Yeah, we will get into that quite deeply.
Exactly how they're doing it. Well, the company that I run designs and manufactures plug-in electric vehicles, plain and simple. These are not fancy vehicles. There are plenty of those out there. If you want to buy a $120,000 sports car, I'm sure there's a short line. You can get in it and you can buy one. We decided that we would have four basic design criteria for our vehicle. First of all, it had to plug into any ordinary outlet, 110, 220, a dryer plug, a wall socket in someone's garage. It had to use existing infrastructure, no charging grid required. Second of all, it had to drive just like a gasoline-powered vehicle, no golf cart. People didn't want to get out there on the road and get run over by a gasoline-powered vehicle. They had to drive right along side by side beside a regular gasoline vehicle. The third one was they had to go at least 100 miles on a charge. We found that the range anxiety went away with people once we got to 100 miles between a charge. And the fourth was, and this is the most important, the price could not exceed $25,000. Now that eliminated, any two of those eliminated all of our competition. We met those design criteria in April of 2009, and we were awarded a multi-million dollar incentive package from the Commonwealth of Kentucky to start manufacturing in that state, which we did in November of 2009. That was part of a Department of Energy grant application for $24 million. And that is where the plot thickened.
Okay, we'll get into the thickened plot here in just a second, but let me jump ahead with this statement. Ladies and gentlemen, what you're about to hear is how Europe gets it and D.C. doesn't. You're about to hear either D.C. doesn't get it or they are so thoroughly entrenched in corruption that they simply refuse to allow you to benefit from this. Now, that's my statement. That's not Dr. Agnew's statement. That's my assessment of what you're about to hear. I've already heard it. Europe gets it. DC either doesn't get it, or they are just too corrupt to allow you to benefit. Okay, let's talk about how the plot thickens, because these are not just concepts on paper. You've actually built these cars. You've actually even test driven them I believe at the Indianapolis 500, you did a test lap, right?
No, not at the Indy 500, but at several racetracks across the country, including Miller Motor Park, which is a world-class road racing park in Utah, at the Rocky Mountain Raceway, at Corbin Raceway, at Charlotte Motor Speedway. Our truck has been pacing races and been demonstrated to thousands and thousands of drivers all around the country.
Okay, so you got this multi-million dollar financial package to start manufacturing these in the state of Kentucky, and you did that in November 2009.
Right, and we were ostensibly, we and all the other electric vehicle innovators, there were about 12 of us in 2008-2009, we were the small business poster children for President Obama's popularity campaign. Hardly a stump went by but what he didn't stand up and say that he was going to be giving electric money to small business to manufacture electric vehicles. I don't know how many speeches you could play back where he's saying that, but it's probably in the hundreds. Meanwhile, in the fall of 2009, that grant for, that we had applied for, it was a total grant package of $384 million, was given to the major car makers at a manufacturer called Navistar in Indiana. And in fact, two of the recipients were not even American companies. They were foreign companies that received grant money from that grant. Not one single small business received a penny from that. Now, what we see from our point of view is that the buggy whip makers, for those of you that are there too young to remember this, when automobiles began to come on the scene in the United States, they were seen as a menace. And the buggy whip makers were going out of business. So the government decided to subsidize buggy whip makers, even though cars were beginning to take over the market. Well, that's exactly what's happening now. Except now the subsidy is in the tune of $40 billion that's been given to the buggy whip makers who are still running commercials showing 500 horsepower cars burning the tread off the tires, drifting sideways in and out of pedestrians. Every single commercial you watch on TV shows some kind of high performance car drifting sideways in a reckless manner. Not anything like any Americans I know that drive on public highways, not more than once anyway. Detroit doesn't get it, and Washington doesn't get it either. That's not what America wants, it's not what America needs, and you're right, Europeans get it.
One of the things that Americans who travel abroad are a little bit sensitive about, a couple of things. One is the European notion that America, all Americans, are Wild West cowboys in their mentality, which is basically, and for all my European friends, and I have many, that's basically a bag load of BS. It's simply not true. Another thing that Americans are sensitive about is the when they travel in Europe, is sort of a pervasive notion out there that somehow Europeans are intrinsically more sophisticated in their thinking. That also is not true. Not when you compare on a broad scale, but there are specific areas, there are specific instances in which there is absolutely no defense for American thinking or actions, and this is one of them. And in this case, there is no question but that the Europeans are much more sophisticated and open-minded in their thinking about alternative energies and the future. And this is a good case to illustrate that. Now, you actually developed the automobile, four models, I believe you said.
Yes.
You actually have demonstrated them. You've demonstrated them in Europe as well. And the Europeans are open to buying them. The Europeans are open to buying them, and you're receiving nothing but resistance from the government here in the United States. Is that correct?
Well, I don't. I mean, the Europeans have come here, and they've driven our trucks, and they have bought our trucks. And the European community has a little different threshold than the U.S. community does. The European community allows small business to get into this business by creating a lower safety, or at least an acceptable safety standard, up to a certain volume per year. This allows small companies to get some exposure, allow some revenue model to get into place, you know, allow the people to have access to their products on the road. In the U.S., you cannot manufacture, you cannot put a vehicle on the highway unless it meets federal motor vehicle safety standards. Now, those standards are changed now about every 6 months. In fact, the last change that Mr. Ray LaHood made to, or Secretary Ray LaHood made to the safety standards, made every single car manufactured in America fall out of the five-star rating category. Only two cars still meet the standard, and neither one of them are American-made. One is the Hyundai Sonata, and the other is a BMW. So Mr. Ray LaHood has told the Americans that no cars built in America meet the safety standards that he has set forth.
Well, I think, you know, when we talk about safety, I think everybody wants to drive a car that's safe. So elaborate just a little bit on this issue. If your car doesn't meet those safety standards, is your car safe for people to drive?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because some of those safety standards are things like a sonic warning system that says you're getting too close to an object behind you. Well, if you drive a vehicle that has very good visibility and you look in your mirrors properly, people have been backing up for 100 years in this country without hitting anything, mm-hmm. without a sonic warning system. That being said, there are lots of vehicles in the United States that are made that have really poor rear visibility.
Yes.
Like these giant SUVs. You do need some kind of warning system in those vehicles. But there is no sense in putting those kind of warning systems in a vehicle that has perfectly good rear visibility. Other things are kind of silly, like they have raised the roof crush specifications to 3 times the weight of the body.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll pick up right there when we come back. So don't go away, ladies and gentlemen. More from Dr. Agnew and why you're not going to get the benefit. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew. Dr. Agnew, when we went away for break, you were about to explain how the safety standards for the roof crush test have changed.
Well, the roof crush test as of January of this year changed to 3 times the body weight instead of 2 times the body weight as the previous year. Now, that sounds really safe, and I believe that it is. You need to have a roof that sustains 3 times the body weight when the car flips over. But the way the test is implemented is that the vehicle is clamped, not at the frame, but at the side of the body where the seam is welded together, and then they crush the vehicle. Well, the problem with that is that that lower seam has nothing to do with that car when it's upside down and lands on its roof. So what that does is it makes car makers have to strengthen the bottom of the car in order to make the roof of the car pass the test. and that is prohibitively expensive. So what we see here is a concerted effort to drive the cost of vehicles up so high, new cars, that the average person cannot afford them. Now, when you couple this with the plan that Mr. LaHood has, that is a $1.5 trillion plan to refurbish 230,000 miles of unused rail in the United States, to shift us from a car-buying country to a train-riding country. That's mm-hmm. the plan. And he is doing it by making cars prohibitively expensive.
So the real agenda here is not the safety of the automobile. The real agenda is to move us away from automobiles altogether.
That's correct. And I would not say that, except I heard him say it face-to-face when I met with him in Washington a few months ago.
All right, I want us to get into that meeting. Now, tell us again who Mr. Hood is. Some folks may have missed it. And then I want you to tell our audience about that meeting.
Ray LaHood is the Secretary of Transportation, appointed by Mr. Obama. His job is to implement the Department of Transportation and set forth policy as directed by the President. He is a cabinet member of the administration.
Okay, now you had a meeting with him face-to-face in his office, Washington, D.C., you were not alone. Who else was with you?
This was not in his office. This was in the Congressional Auditorium next to the White House.
Okay, the Congressional Auditorium. Who else was with you?
I had 8 senators from the state of North Carolina. I had a senator from the state of Ohio. I'm sorry, 8 congressmen from the state of North Carolina. And 2 other congressmen, one from Ohio and one from one other state. And there were about 400 people from the state of North Carolina there with me.
What was the purpose of this meeting, Dr. Agnew?
This was the annual Congressional Business Summit from a North Carolina perspective.
Okay. And why was Mr. LaHood there?
He was invited to come and speak to us about his plans and to listen to a few of the constituents, one of whom was me, representing our car company.
Okay.
Now, after he finished talking about his $1.5 trillion train program, I went forward and I said, Mr. Secretary, I would like to know what the Department of Transportation is going to do to support small business producing, manufacturing, and delivering electric vehicles for use in America. And he looked down at me and said, electric vehicles? Why don't you just buy a GM? Why don't you just buy a Volt? And I said, well, I understand that. Actually, you can't buy a Volt, and at that time you could not. I said, you can lease one. But we did that already. We've been through that game with General Motors once before. It was called the EV1. So I want to know what plans the Department of Transportation has to allow small business to supply these vehicles. Why just the major car makers? And he said, well, because they made the investment. And I said, with all respect, Mr. Secretary, actually, the taxpayers made that investment, and we didn't get paid back.
How did he respond to that?
He said, thank you for coming to Washington, and he left.
Direct questions from the people who own the country always makes the powers that be nervous. Now, the powers that be have names. You've given us the name of one of them, Ray LaHood. The powers that be have names. These are people, these are actual living, breathing, flesh and blood humans that by whatever means, hook and crook, we have allowed into these high positions. And then they act as though they do not have to listen or respond to those who are paying the bills. who own the country. I would suggest, if Mr. LaHood is listening, and I guarantee you someone in the administration will be listening, and he will be briefed on this by probably by 10 o'clock in the morning. He'll know about it. So I would suggest for Mr. LaHood and all other powers that be that they go sit and watch the coverage of what happens when a government refuses to listen to its people. It's happening in Egypt. It's called they fire the government.
Wow, those are powerful words, Kevin. I want to tell you also about my experience with the Department of Energy. As you know, we spent well over $300,000 in application fees and costs in order to apply for several Department of Energy grants.
Mm-hmm.
Because after all, the advertisement programs were unbelievably tempting. I mean, please, if you've got a small business, you have disruptive technology, you can make electric vehicles, please come to us. We will give you money. Well, we went and we applied. And this is how the government drags the small businessman into the muck and doesn't let him out. He puts forth the application, the temptation to lay out hundreds of thousands of dollars in application fees and costs. It costs money to apply. You know, you don't just send in a piece of paper, you got to send in a check with it. And then once they go through all your money, they tell you, oh, by the way, we're giving all the grants to the major car makers. So we went to Washington and we spoke to the what's called the FOA, the Funding Opportunity Writers themselves, that work for Undersecretary Christine Johnston, who works for Secretary Chu, who is the Secretary of Energy, who is a cabinet member under President Obama. Here is their policy. I quote, small business has no business building electric vehicles. If you want to supply General Motors, we will give you a grant. You want to build vehicles on your own, you are on your own.
Where is that published?
It isn't published. They said it directly to me, and I also have it in the form of an email.
Small business has no business building electric vehicles. If you want to build it for General Motors, then they'll help you.
General Motors, we will give you a grant.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to build them on your own, you are on your own.
Now, I have a question about this email that you have and this statement that was made to you. Was that before or after GM became Government Motors?
It was after.
There you go. All right. Well, now, folks, if you don't know, socialism is where the government is in control of the means and of manufacturing. When you get down to the brass tacks of it, that's what it is. And so what they're saying is, if you want to build them, go ahead, but you're on your own.
Well, here's the demise of that. You know, this fascism, this socialism that you're talking about. It's all well and good until the people want that product. I guarantee you that if the government would have stood in the way of PlayStation, there would be a huge black market for PlayStations. The problem is that this car company, has more than 150,000 orders for this electric pickup truck. And no government can stand in the way of that.
The problem, though, is those are orders from Europe, right?
Not all of them. A lot of those orders are from right here in the U.S., and some of them are from government agencies.
Man, talk about convoluted and weird. Corruption does great things when it gets into the hands of the powers that be and the people who have hijacked the government. All right, let me ask you a question. How many electric car companies existed in 2009?
There were 12 independent electric car companies in the United States. Today, there are two.
And your company is one of the two.
I was going to say, first quarter of 2009, green tech investments were $9 billion. In the same period in 2010, they were $2 billion. And we're not even going to make that the first quarter of 2011.
Additionally, you've got orders totaling I would suspect the upper millions, perhaps billions of dollars for your cars, for your automobiles.
$2.13 billion in sales.
Okay. So you ought to be able to take those sales, those contracts for sales, you ought to be able to take that, go to the bank, and use those contracts to finance the manufacturing of the cars that would fulfill those contracts. How's that
going?
You're
correct, except for one word.
What's that?
You can't go to the bank.
Why?
The banks are broke. But you can go to investors, and that's what we have done.
So things then, from where you sit, things in this country don't match what we're being told on the television when it comes to the financial health of the banks and so forth.
Well, it does if you put the dots together. You'll remember that just recently they pushed for an audit of the Fed.
Yeah.
Now, they didn't get the full audit, but they did reveal some numbers. $3.3 trillion was taken from the Fed and given, I say given, at 0.0% interest to a select few multinational corporations. At the top of the list was General Electric, also Disney, and others. And the strange thing is, at the top of the list is General Electric, and lo and behold, 10 days ago, Obama appoints the CEO of General Electric as the new head of economic recovery. Banks don't have the money because the Fed gave it away. Our tax money, they gave away.
Well, of course, the Fed is not federal. It's a private corporation.
Yes.
And in majority, it is owned by European families. We'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking with Dr. Brooks Agnew this evening, and we're talking about real-life situations where futuristic science is available. You could be benefiting from it, and the PTBs have, the powers that be, have done everything in their power to make sure you don't benefit from it, and yet folks in Europe get it. And they will benefit from it. Okay, let's talk about these cars, these automobiles. Some of them are cars, some of them are, I think you have a pickup as well. So let's say, Dr. Agnew, that this became available and here in the United States, and I wanted to buy, I'm looking at a picture now of a green and white automobile, just to describe it for you, green and white, so you probably know which one it is. I want to buy one of your cars. What's it going to cost for me to get into this car? And then, once I own it, can I drive it on the highway?
Well, you're looking at what we call the Hopper. It's a little crossover two-seater. It's a commuter car with a little trunk in the back. Goes around 125 miles on a charge. It is highway ready. It will be able to go speeds of 85 miles an hour plus. You'll be able to drive it for somewhere around 75 cents a day. And it's designed not to take you from here to Las Vegas, but from take you from home to work and back again every single day, day after day, without burning any fuel at all. Many of these vehicles, it depends on which part of the country you live in, are fueled by hydroelectric power, clear power, natural gas, in some cases solar, and in only 55% of the cases are actually charged up with coal-fired electricity. Now, that being said, usually they charge up at night, and these plants are idling anyway, or as much as they can idle. They have a lot of wasted, unused electricity at night. They're really not adding one single pound of CO2 to the atmosphere by driving one of these vehicles. And they're kind of fun to drive, actually. Now, that car is not available yet, but it will be when the size of the company gets such that we can introduce the next model. The first model that we're introducing is a light pickup truck. As you know, I came from the automotive industry. I knew the direction the automotive industry was going in 2011, 2012. I knew that there would not be any small pickup trucks in production in the United States any longer. Everything would be a mid-sized truck or it would be a full-sized truck. They've been leading us away from that for a decade, and now the mileage requirements have gotten to the point where U.S. dealers cannot make a small pickup truck anymore. So that little pickup truck is called the Everest for a lot of reasons, a tough mountain to climb, but it will be the only small pickup truck in America, and it'll be the only highway-ready electric pickup truck in America.
Okay, now, when you say highway-ready, I mean, has it been approved by the government for use on the highways?
No, I use the words will be. We began the crash testing process in January of 2009. We had to pull the plug on it because the Department of Energy pulled the plug on the small business making electric vehicles. But fortunately, investors have stepped up and seem to be filling in the gap, and we will shortly resume that process. Within a few months, that truck will be available for American highways.
And how much will that truck cost us?
That truck sells for $25,000 before rebates.
Okay, so, and that's certainly economical in today's market, $25,000. But now, with rebates, what could I expect that's going to hit my pocket? To what extent will that hit my pocket?
Well, that also depends on where you live, and to some extent. The federal rebate is up to $7,500. It depends on what your income is. That rebate only applies to the first 100,000 vehicles made from any manufacturing plant. Once that plant reaches its 100,000th vehicle, that rebate goes away. Some states also have rebates for purchasing an electric vehicle because it lowers their carbon footprint, and some cities like Los Angeles and New York and Houston also have rebates to encourage people to buy electric vehicles.
All right. Now, on this with this pickup, you gave us sort of the road specs for the Hopper. But with this pickup, top speed, how many miles can I go on a charge?
You'll be able to go at least 100 miles on a charge. It has a 1,000-pound payload. It will reach speeds over 85 miles an hour. In fact, that pickup truck that you see on the website does an 18-second quarter mile, which is very competitive even with a gasoline-powered small pickup truck.
What about comfort amenities in these vehicles? For instance, do they have air conditioning?
They come come with air conditioning, yes. It is an electric air conditioning. That is also used by other production vehicles, not necessarily electric. So it will get just as cold as a regular gasoline-powered vehicle. They also come with forms of heat. One of the forms of heat works when you're stopped and not moving, and the other form of heat runs on the electric heat that's put out by the motor during operation.
So, but I would assume that just like, well, the older types of air conditioning where it put a load on the gasoline engines, when you turned on the air conditioner, your mileage went down. I would assume that with this electric air conditioning, when you turn on the air conditioning, the number of miles you can drive between charge-ups goes down.
That's a correct assumption. Now, what we have done to mitigate that, of course, is something that gasoline vehicles don't do. Gasoline vehicles oversize the evaporator, oversize the compressor, and just load up the engine with more waste, and they'll just make as much cold air as you want. They're not insulated. The vehicles are not insulated at all. We insulate the vehicles, the sidewalls, the roof, the floorboard, the bulkhead, and the rear panel, so that once the vehicle gets cold, it stays cold, and we conserve energy.
Have you looked into, and maybe you've already got these on the vehicle, I don't know, but have you looked into the possibility of having some type of generator or alternator that is spun by the motion of the vehicle to sort of backfill the batteries a little bit?
Actually, we use a system that we have called OmniCharge. The vehicle recharges itself six different ways. It has a solar panel on the roof. That's the first way. It uses what we call kinetic energy recovery. These are all the little movements that the vehicle makes. Those are converted into electricity and put back into the batteries. We have a system we call Coast and Go, which is a programmable deceleration that occurs when you let off the accelerator. Unlike the, let's say, Tesla, when you drive it, you have to leave your foot on the accelerator all the time, keep the vehicle moving forward. As soon as you take your foot off the accelerator, the vehicle decelerates and puts that amperage back into the batteries, but you really don't have a choice in the matter. We give the drivers a choice, so they can take their foot off and coast for three blocks without burning any energy at all if they want, or they can take their foot off and have the vehicle slow down, putting that energy back into the batteries. The next way is called regenerative braking. When you touch the brakes, the first part of the braking is accomplished by reversing the field on the motor and turning it into a generator, thereby using the batteries as a resistor to slow the vehicle down, and you collect all that energy during the braking process. And of course, the other way is that we convert the heat that's generated by the motor and by the electronics directly into electricity. And last but not least, you can plug it into the wall and charge it up, which most people will do at night anyway.
How long, we've just got about 30 seconds here till break. How long does it take to completely charge up the batteries?
If you completely exhaust the batteries, it will take about 8 to 10 hours to completely recharge.
All right. We're going to recharge here just a little bit. We're going to step away for a break, and we'll be back with more from Dr. Brooks Agnew right after this break. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening, Dr. Brooks Agnew. Dr. Agnew, we have a caller on hold. And ladies and gentlemen, the telephone lines are open. The telephone number is 623-444-5889, and you can call that from anywhere on this planet. 623-444-5889. Works from anywhere on the planet, probably also from Planet X. We have a toll-free number for you in the USA and Canada. That number is 888-223-4599. So if you need to call me toll-free, use that number. If you can call me without it costing you long distance, call me at 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, I don't have a toll-free number for you out there. But what I do have is the flash message option. You just go to my website, kevinsmithshow.com. Scroll down, you see the picture about tonight's show. On the right side of that picture, you'll see the link for flash messages. All right, let's go straight to the telephone caller. You're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hello, Kevin. This is Tracy from Canada.
Hello, Tracy.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, Dr. Brooks. Wonderful
Hello.
To talk to you guys tonight in the middle of the snowstorm.
Yeah.
A couple of questions for you guys. Dr. Brooks, I guess my basic question is, we've had electrical motors for so long that went hand in hand with combustion engines. I know even up here in Canada, I used to work at Paramount Canada's Wonderland, and we had DC cars that ran on tracks. So we've always had this technology. It's not new. I realize it was a money situation that chose why we didn't go pure electric or biodiesel. But my question is, do you think no one's made anything that just runs on static electricity now, or do you think it's really been stopped and they haven't followed it through?
Well, I don't know if I completely understand the question. I can tell you that, yes, electric vehicles have been around for 100 years. In fact, the very first vehicles were electric.
Oh, more than 100 years. 1800s was the first one.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it's kind of astonishing that electric vehicles aren't more plentiful than they are. Now, in Europe, they're becoming quite commonplace, and many of the cities in Europe are beginning to come up with a numbering system, 0 through 5. And if your vehicle is ranked in one of those classes based on its pollution, you cannot go to certain places in the city. And in most cases, the little diesel electric trucks that delivered all the goods, like baked goods and you know, every little thing that goes to every little store in downtown Paris, for instance, you can't drive those vehicles down there anymore. So those delivery companies are pretty much out of business unless they adopt electric vehicles. It would be wonderful if we would pass some kind of regulations like that in this country that would allow these electric vehicles to get into these markets.
Well, what do they call safety? Because they're working with a combustion engine that really hasn't changed since the 1800s, and it's called combustion for a reason. Like, what do they call safety? Because those things can explode. That's how they operate.
You know what I mean?
My question is, they've stacked you up against something that you can't beat because they're ridiculous in general. The rules are ridiculous. So,
how do we get around it? I don't know that we can't beat it. If there was available capital in the United States, you would see half a dozen independent car companies manufacturing highway-ready electric vehicles. It's not cost prohibitive. There just isn't any capital in this country for that to happen. That's why all these companies, except for two of them, had to go public in order to raise the money. But unfortunately, that opened it wide open to be bought out and taken over. Even Tesla is pretty much out of production now. Their technology has been bought by Toyota, and you will see it in the Toyota RAV4 very shortly.
Tracy, I want to thank you for the call. Pardon me. Oh, my goodness. I want to thank you for the call. And you bring up some good points. It is true, Dr. Agnew, that the basic technology for electric vehicles has been around for over 100 years. But it's also true that new technologies had to be employed in order to get past that 100-mile mark between charging up.
Well, sure. The batteries that have traditionally been used are not capable of storing enough energy to go that far. That being said, you know, in the early part of 2009, you could buy lithium batteries that had very good range. You could get pretty close to 100 miles out of a lot of those batteries, sometimes even more. But there are two countries that cornered the market on lithium, and now battery pack that would have cost $10,000 in the beginning of 2009 cost $35,000, which obviously is way more than the car would cost. So lithium is pretty much finished as a viable power cell for electric vehicles now.
All right, let's go back to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Brooks, I have one request and two comments.
Go for it.
The first comment goes like this. Economic geography states you have to have the delivery mechanism in place. I'm just going to be curious as to what stands in the way if you're delivering your vehicles. The other part of it is that advertising is mostly run by mainstream media. I'm just wondering what kind of trouble you've run into on that. And the request I have goes back to when I was in Scotland several years ago. My cousin's wife's parents, who were getting up there in age, were thinking about trading in their little SUV for a smaller car. I told them, don't. As you get older, you need that higher seat. So if you could think about it, build a small SUV-type car that has a high seat, or at least an adjustable seat, so people with hip problems can get into it.
Well, we thought ahead of you on the Hopper. It is what we call a crossover. It is a two-seater car, but it's high off the ground like an SUV, so you have a very good perspective. You don't have to lay down in it like you do a Mazda Miata or a little Honda, and you get a nice perspective. They're very aerodynamic, and they're lightweight. They only weigh just a skunch over 2,000 pounds. Now, the answer to your second question about advertising, it's kind of clever. We realize that while Washington is running, or not Washington, but it will be Washington, while Detroit is running commercials of 500 horsepower cars burning rubber and sliding sideways over dirt and asphalt and bricks and in and out of pedestrians down the city streets, the American buyer isn't driving that way. And if they are, there's a very hungry law enforcement community out there ready to write them a ticket. And there's a very ready insurance industry that's ready to spank that rash for another couple of years on top of that. So once people get a couple traffic tickets, they're pretty much cured of that speeding. So you really don't need a vehicle that has 500 horsepower or can accelerate from 0 to 60 in 2.5 seconds or go from 0 to 100 to 0 in less than 15 seconds.
What about the delivery of the vehicles? How are you going to be able to roll these out for the American public?
Well, we are going through the American Automobile Dealers Association. We have 40 metropolitan dealership groups. Some of those groups have 160 dealers in them, and some of them have 40 dealers in them, and they have already given us a letter of commitment to distribute. And we've already had dealers come to us from Europe, and this last weekend, one signed a contract with us to purchase vehicles here, export them to Europe, and distribute them in Europe.
Outstanding. Brent, thanks for the call. Well, I said that Europe gets it, DC doesn't. And I still stand by that, but it sounds like you're beating the odds here, and that you're getting over the hurdles, and you're going to be able to roll these out for the American public at some point. Do you have any kind of an estimate, an ETA, on when these are going to be available to the American public?
I would say before the end of this year, you will be able to have an Everest in this country. The FMVSS certification process takes about 4 to 6 months. Most of it is a lot of I dotting and T crossing. There is some crashworthiness testing to be done there, but that goes in pretty short order. That being said, there are still some hurdles. We have to worry about the banks loaning the money to people who want to buy them. So that's always an issue. One of the things that we don't know, and I mean we, the American people, don't know, is we really don't know how big the electric market is in the country. I can tell you because when I go to the racetracks and I pace a race with the electric truck and then afterward I give people rides in the parking lot, I can tell you that I could sell 300 to 400 vehicles a weekend because people are sick and tired of paying $3 a gallon for gasoline when they know there's no darn good reason for it.
Well, very, very soon, $3 for a gallon of gasoline is going to look like a rock-bottom bargain basement price. Very soon, we're going to be seeing gasoline above $5.
I think you're right. And when it gets there, the market for electric vehicles, we believe, is somewhere around 2.5 million vehicles a year. That will take 10 to 12 major car companies to meet that need. There's plenty of market. We just happen to be the only ones with a light pickup truck.
These other, hybrid vehicles, yours is not hybrid, but hybrid vehicles really are not all that efficient or economical. The hydrogen cells in those vehicles, a lot of people don't know this, but they're only good for a few years, and then you have to replace them, and they're excessively expensive to replace.
Sure. The thing about a Prius battery, for instance, you only get 10 miles on a charge. And when that battery has to be replaced, that battery actually has to be exported out of the country because it's too toxic to recycle inside the United States. Those batteries are too toxic to manufacture inside the United States. The batteries that we use are 100% recyclable and safe.
One of the problems that we've seen with batteries before, now we're going to take this telephone call and then we'll get to this question, but one of the things we've seen with, all of us have experienced this, with appliances and things that use batteries, for instance, a video camera, is they develop a memory. And the way it works is it's like putting sand in a glass or putting cement in a glass. And the cement hardens, and so now the glass holds less. And after a little while, you put some more cement in the glass and fill it up a little more, let it harden, and now the glass holds less. And we've seen that happen with batteries. We're going to take this call, and then I want to come to that question about battery memory, and do you have that problem? And if so, how have you solved it? Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Mark from Methuen, Massachusetts.
Hello, Mark.
First-time caller, by the way.
Oh, well, first-time callers, you know what we have to do for you. Hang on, hang on. We're glad to have you, Mark. What's on your mind?
Hey, I got a quick comment and then a question. Just like to say that Mr. Agnew is one of my favorite guests at Frequency Show, and I'm a big fan and have most of his books.
Good.
And my question is, Mr. Agnew, have you heard of the Texas company that supposedly is just making this new kind of battery? It's like an ultra-capacitor hybrid based on like a barium titanate, I guess is what they're calling it. It supposedly packs 10 times the punch of a lead-acid battery and costs half the cost and doesn't need the toxic materials or chemicals. I wonder if you're familiar with that.
I'm not familiar with that particular ultracapacitor. There are about half a dozen of them on the market. Most of them use ceramic separators, and they work very, very fine on the workbench. But once we put them in the shake and bake, which is what happens while they're mounted inside of a vehicle, they don't last very long. However, that being said, we have open architecture, which means we don't build batteries. We build flashlights, so to speak. So we know that there's new battery technology out there. We know that there's new capacitor technology out there. But unfortunately, in the United States, there are no cars to use them yet. So we hope to solve that problem by getting a couple hundred thousand of our trucks on the road. Then it creates a market for companies just like that one in Texas to make their way into the automotive world. Our door is open to companies just like that. We want them to come to us.
Yeah, I wish you the best, Brooks, and hopefully there'll be more people like you out there that will get on the horse and get this thing rolling, because I know it's tough out there with the economy and the way the government is structured right now. It's just, it's kind of depressing, you know?
Yeah, well, I'm becoming less and less convinced there is such a thing as government. There's a loose coalition of bureaucracies, but I don't know about a government. And I really hope that there are more just like me, more companies like ours. We really need 10 or even 20 companies building electric vehicles and getting them on the road. One thing is for sure, you are not going to see electric vehicles come from the major car makers. There's no win for them.
All right, Mark, thanks. I appreciate the call. The telephone lines are open, folks, and the telephone numbers are 623-444-5889 or toll-free in the USA and Canada, 888-223-4599.
Answer your question about the battery memory.
Yes.
The batteries that you're referring to that gain a memory are called nickel-cadmium.
Mm-hmm.
They are rechargeable batteries. And they do develop a memory. If you don't use them all the way down to the bottom and then recharge them all the way back up, they will develop a memory. More and more of these batteries are being replaced by sodium zinc and also with lithium batteries. In most of the hardware stores, you can now buy lithium polymer batteries that will replace those batteries for your electric drill and make it go a lot further on a charge. They cost more, but it might be more convenient for you. And you know what? For small things like that, lithium batteries are perfect. But cars require hundreds of pounds of those batteries. And if you were to see the lithium mining process, you would think that cutting down rainforests to raise cattle would be a fair use of land compared to lithium mining. It is absolutely 100% destructive to the surface area of the land at a lithium mine.
So what kind of batteries do you use in your car?
Right now we use a lead AGM battery. This is a special gel. It won't leak out of the battery even if you drill a 3/8 hole in the side of the battery. They don't heat up. They will take the full charge from our regenerative process. They are heavy. They weigh over 1,000 pounds in our vehicle, but after all, it is a truck. And there are better battery technologies out there. They just haven't made their way to manufacturing yet.
Outstanding. All right, 623-444-5889 is our main number. You can call that from anywhere on the planet. In the USA and Canada, we do have a toll-free number if you need to use it. It is 888-223-4599. Or you can send me a flash message. Let me check those real quick and see if we've gotten any flash messages in yet. And the answer to that is a yes, and it's from Leonardo in Puerto Rico. Caller, do you want to hang on till I finish with this flash message?
Yes, sir.
All right. Tell you what, we have a break coming up. Let's go ahead and take the call, and then we'll do the flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, my name is Travis from Kansas.
Hello, Travis.
Hey, I was just wanting to ask Mr. Agnew if he's had any problems with the extreme weather on these new electric vehicles.
Like good question.
Yes, we have. If the batteries are left out in the cold, they don't perform quite as well. They lose about 30 to 40% of their ability to hold a charge. We discovered that through two winters of testing, all the way down to about 7 degrees Fahrenheit. So what we have learned from that is we now insulate the battery boxes, and while the batteries are charging, that is to say they're plugged into the wall, they're being warmed. So they're kept warm. Now, you can't go out and drive an electric vehicle for 300 miles. You're going to drive 100 miles in one shot, or you're going to drive a whole bunch of small trips and plug in between those trips. And while the vehicle is moving, the motor is warming the batteries. While it's plugged into the wall or the sun is shining, the batteries are being warmed, either from the solar panel on the roof or from the plug-in in the wall. So that's how we overcome that problem. In the extreme heat, and we've tested them in temperatures as high as 116 degrees in the shade, they do just fine.
I just wanted to ask, because I have a Honda Hybrid right now, and it drops battery life when it sets out in the cold.
Sure does, because Honda does not warm their batteries while, and I don't know if you have the plug-in hybrid, or are you driving the Insight?
The Insight.
Yeah, so they don't warm the batteries while the vehicle is parked. It would be a really smart idea to add a plug-in option and some heaters on those batteries so that the battery life would be extended.
Okay, Travis, I want to thank you for the call. Are you a first-time caller?
No, sir. I've called like 2 times before.
Okay. All right. Thanks for the call. How about handling? Because right now, across a great deal of the United States of America, there is a blizzard. So how about handling as compared to standard automobiles in these blizzard conditions?
Really shine. That's where these vehicles really shine. Most people that have owned a light pickup truck, a small pickup truck, know.
Well, Dr. Agnew, we're going to have to get an answer to that on the other side of this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And my guest this evening is Dr. Brooks Agnew. Dr. Agnew, keep that thought in mind, and we'll get right back to it. Very quickly, folks, let me remind you that we have something special for you. For those of you who step up to help us to meet the budget, all right? We need your donations in any amount. We don't run ads on the show. So it's listener supported. So what I've done, for those of you who donate $50 or more, I've got 22 hours of viewing pleasure on this DVD. 22 hours of some of the hottest shows that we've done over the past year, from January last year till January this year. So you'll get to see what you've been missing if you're not a member. Just click the donate button on my website, and you're good to go. How about that? All right, Dr. Agnew. Oh, one other thing. Earlier, I made mention of the fact that people that are powers that be, these hot shots in big positions, need to be watching what happens. They need to be watching in Egypt, because I said this is what happens when a government refuses to listen to its people. This is what happens when the government is corrupt. This is what happens when the people have had enough. Okay? They need to be watching that. And I want to underscore something. I am not advocating that there be such a revolution here. I'm not advocating for anything at all. I'm simply observing that they don't observe. They said nobody expected this would happen. Well, that's because they don't listen to the people in this country or any other country. That's why they didn't expect it. They need to pay attention. All right, Dr. Agnew. Folks, you may think I live in freedom. That just got me put on the watch list and on Janet Napolitano's possible threat list just because I told you the truth. Just like it was happening over in Egypt, it's happening here. You know, if you tell the truth, they call you an enemy of the state. Okay, Dr. Agnew, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence when we went to break. I want to give you the opportunity to finish your thought.
Well, I was going to say, anybody that's owned a small pickup truck that doesn't have any weight in the back of it knows that when you get it in the snow, you might as well get it on a walk, because it's not going to go anywhere. That's where these little electric trucks shine, because they have 1,000 pounds of batteries nestled around that rear axle. And we've driven them through 2 winters with 8 inches of snow on the ground, and it drives right through the snow like it wasn't even there.
You've described for us this evening what I would certainly consider to be futuristic technology being applied to automobiles. Sometimes when we talk about futuristic science, people think in terms of, you know, a transporter room or a holodeck or a starship, you know, with some kind of warp drive, and that is futuristic science. But there's all sorts of futuristic science that can be applied to things we're already using every day. And people don't stop to think about it. You know, if they're using any kind of a cell phone, that is very futuristic science based on quantum theory. It relies upon it. And you and I can both remember when there was no such thing as a cell phone. And when they did first come out, they were the size of a brick. And now you can slip one in your shirt pocket, and most people can't even tell it's in your shirt pocket. They're so thin and so small. That's futuristic science. Well, futuristic science can be and has been applied to these automobiles that you're talking about. And if the powers that be, if the government, will just get out of the way, then these could be in the hands of everyday, ordinary people, just like you, me, and everybody listening to this show. And we wouldn't be burning so much gasoline. It wouldn't cost us so much to drive. I think you said you could drive for about 75 cents a day, right?
Yeah, let me just run some of the economics by you. 150 million commuters drive to and from work every single day, and according to the Department of Transportation, that is less than 38 miles a day round trip. Those same commuters are spending $350 million a day in gasoline. If we were to take that money and put it back into the pockets of those same commuters, that is a stimulus program that works.
That makes sense to me. But there is one huge problem with that. If you put that money back into the pockets of those commuters, how can any executive, there is no executive along the way, that can get a $26 million bonus for bankrupting a company?
Well, that's true, except that, while Detroit is going to continue to go bankrupt over and over and over again, just like the commercial rail industry has gone bankrupt over and over and over again, because it doesn't belong in our economy. We are a car-driving people. Americans are in love with their automobiles. It's essential to our economy. When you look at the freeways that are choked with cars, they don't necessarily need to be choked with pollution at the same time. They can be busy with those cars driving to and from work, and our freeway air can be clean again. That's not going to cost American jobs. That's going to create American jobs. Our facility, our plant, is located in the second most economically challenged congressional district in the nation, and it needs those 1,200 jobs that this plant can provide. That community needs the $15 million a year in payroll that we would provide to that community. Eastern Kentucky would thrive with a company with that kind of payroll going into that area. Now, mind you, that's not really going to bite into the gasoline-powered car market, because there are lots of applications for gasoline-powered cars that are not commuting. Lots of people do drive more than 100 miles at a time. They do need a vehicle that goes that far. This isn't going to replace their daily or their regular driving car, although usually when we loan these out to people, they park their gasoline-powered cars for up to 6 weeks at a time. But it will augment their travel options and allow them to add all those little trips that they had to give up, going to Lowe's three times on a Saturday or going to the mall a couple times a week just to walk around. They don't do it now because they can't afford the gasoline, and that's hurting the economy as well.
You know, a great many people have two cars. Some people, like Jay Leno, have a herd of cars. But and that's fine. He certainly can afford them. But most families have two cars. And if you just replaced one of them with an electric car, then you've got the other one for cross country. And say you've got a van or an SUV and you keep it for cross country, and the other gasoline car that you're using, replace it with electric and do your commuting and running around with it. You know, I don't see anything but benefit. I'm sorry?
Think about it, too. Electricity is 100% American made, and oil that turns into gasoline is only 36% American made.
There you go. So I don't see anything but benefit to the people, and thus benefit to the country, by having this technology available to us. I've got a flash message here from Leonardo in Puerto Rico, and it's kind of long, so I'm going to sort of condense it. But he says, "Who killed the electric car in the 1970s? The three major motor companies." And then he goes on to talk about Prohibition, how the Rockefellers gave a group of elite females $4 million to do their part in outlawing booze. The law prohibited people to distill for alcohol, and then, meaning alcohol for fuel in this case, And then comes gasoline. Wow, how fortunate.
Well, I totally support the latter part of his comment there, that prohibition is what eliminated alcohol as a fuel for vehicles and switched him over to gasoline. The first part of his comment I want to clarify, it was General Motors that killed the electric car, and it wasn't in the 70s, it was in the 90s. And it was in response to Governor Pete Wilson wanting to run for governor. That was the trade-off. Governor Pete Wilson repealed the law that mandated a certain percentage of LA commuters to be electric, and in exchange, General Motors supported Pete Wilson's run for the presidency.
All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on The Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Tony from Denver.
Hello, Tony.
Dr. Agnew, I'd like to first of all thank you for all your hard work.
Thank you very much.
You said that Obama and the government Motors will never make electric cars because there's no win for them. Why is there no win for Obama?
Because every electric car that General Motors makes displaces a gasoline-powered car they already make. And electric vehicles have fewer components in them, which means fewer people working. That means the unions will not allow General Motors to make electric vehicles. There is no win for General Motors. There's no win for Obama because the deal that Obama made for the $40 billion in bailout money that went to General Motors was they get 64% of the preferred stock of General Motors. They can't let General Motors fail.
Yeah, that would make sense. I guess the unions are a big supporter of the Democrats. Do you want nuclear power plants?
Well, wait a minute. I want to challenge that for a moment.
Okay.
That fits very well in a political show. But what we're talking about here is the economics involved. And that is that the unions are not going to approve of anything that means fewer workers, and electric automobiles means fewer people needed to make the automobile. So from that point, it's economic and not political. And it's a no-win for them to support electric automobiles because it means fewer workers required. And the unions, of course, want more.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
Now, fewer union workers, that's for sure, because a lot of the components that would go into these electric cars would not come from the automotive industry. They would not come from unionized plants.
Mm-hmm. Okay, Tony, you had another comment?
Yeah, then I want to know if Dr. Agnew was in favor of more nuclear power plants.
I am in favor of nuclear power plants. I think it's clean energy. We haven't built one since before 1970 in the United States. Computer technology has come a long way. Our ability to handle those kinds of...
All right, we have to step away for break. I want to thank you for the call, Tony, and we'll get the rest of that answer on the other side of the break. Don't go away, folks. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We are talking with Dr. Brooks Agnew this evening, and we are talking about this new technology applied to electric automobiles. Europe gets it. You can get one and drive it in Europe, but all kinds of hurdles, roadblocks, and obstructions thrown in the way here in the United States of America by the very people who say we want to invest in new technology, we want to invest in new energies sources, we want to invest in breakthrough technology, and then face to face tell Dr. Agnew, if you want to build electric cars for GM, we'll give you a grant. If you want to do it yourself, you're on your own. Dr. Agnew, I had to cut you off in mid-sentence when we went to break, so the floor is yours.
Well, your caller had mentioned or had asked the question if I was in favor of nuclear power plants.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that I was. I think that nuclear power is clean. It is not necessarily renewable because the enriched uranium and the depleted rods, which is kind of old technology, would have to be gotten rid of in some fashion. But that being said, there's uranium that occurs naturally inside the earth, and there are safe ways to handle that waste. My degree is in nuclear chemistry, so I'm not speaking from ignorance here. I think that nuclear power plants can be done safely. I would rather see 5 nuclear power plants built than 1 oil refiner.
Why?
Well, because oil refineries are horribly polluting. And I think that burning oil for transportation is a little like rubbing 2 sticks together to make fire. Oil is a very valuable commodity for plastics, for fibers, coatings, for drugs, for all kinds of durable goods, everything from computers to airplane wings. We can use oil to make something that will last. And those polymers and those solvents and those coatings are worth a lot more money per gallon than gasoline or diesel fuel. We now have technology that we can replace about 1/3 of our use of gasoline in this country. And it doesn't make any sense to me to be in the 21st century and still shoveling our planet into our gas tanks and burning it, as much fun as it is.
Good enough. All right, back to the telephone, and caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name, and from where are you calling?
This is Lloyd. I'm in Florida.
Hello, Lloyd.
What is the body of that pickup truck made out of? Is that metal or is it plastic?
That body is steel. The green and silver car that you see, the silver parts are steel to keep the driver safe, and the green parts are composite. And silver car that's on the website is an aluminum space frame car with carbon fiber panels in between those frames with a steel body. That car only weighs 1,700 pounds.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks for the call, Lloyd. So now you say the pickup is steel.
Yes.
How much does it weigh?
And it weighs 3,000 pounds.
Okay. And it has
a little differently. It's built a little differently than conventional pickup trucks, where you have a frame and then you have a cab and you bolt the cab onto the frame under rubber bushings. We didn't do it that way because it will not hold up in an accident. We weld the entire thing together like a unibody.
All right, so let's talk about the safety of these batteries in a crash.
Okay, most electric car companies, and we've looked at just about every electric car company's crash test films. Most car companies put all their batteries in one big box, and that box becomes kind of a battering ram in an accident. The car stops, and the battery box keeps going and going, and it's pretty hard to stop once it gets moving. So we redesigned the way batteries are attached to our truck, so that they would crash in a progressive manner, so that the frame that the truck would absorb all of the energy of any crash from any direction, and the batteries moving together, bending that frame, actually spare the cab almost any damage. We ran that truck at 30 miles an hour into an immovable concrete wall, and both crash test dummies walked away and barely spilled their coffee.
Was it McDonald's coffee?
I, I don't know. That was a figurative speech.
Well, because if you spill McDonald's coffee, you can sue them and get a lot of money if it's hot.
Hey, as good as McDonald's coffee tastes, I wouldn't want to spill it.
Well, Dr. Agnew, I said this before. I don't see any negatives. I see only positives. I see only benefits. If we could get this kind of technology into the hands of people, a large number of people, it sounds to me like you've got things lined up where that's going to become possible, perhaps beginning this year. The dealer situation is important, because maybe I want one of these, but the only dealer I can find is in New York City, so I've got to drive forever to get to New York City or fly so I can buy one of these cars. Well, if you've got the dealer situation solved so that you'll have dealers across the country, then that puts it into the hands of the people. But quickly now, let me ask you, doesn't all of this put you in some personal danger?
No, I really haven't felt any personal danger. Even when we were in Washington, it was a little, confrontational. And I do apologize for my somewhat bitter tone at the beginning of this, but I can tell you that I was taken in, along with all the Americans and our investors, from the misleading, and I'm going to just say false advertising, of the White House, that they were in support of small business building electric vehicles. Nothing could be further from the truth. My discovery of that kind of soured me on the government process. And, of course, the loss of over $300,000 of my own money also made me a little sour as well. But that being said, lessons learned. I believe in the American people. I believe in the American dream. And we will just keep overcoming. If we have to go around the government, we will go around the government. We'll meet all the requirements. We will bring the vehicles to fruition, and we will deliver them to the American people.
And I like your spirit. I like the way you talk. I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it, even though I personally do not drive. I can drive, but I hate driving. And I don't own a car, not in this country. But I'm excited about it because I know that people cannot get by without automobiles in most cases. And we cannot continue the system we have because it's untenable economically, it's untenable ecologically, and it looks to me like you and some futuristic science are sort of riding to the rescue, and I'm delighted to see it.
Well, I'm not alone. There are other electric car manufacturers out there, the great smart guys at Lion Motors in North Carolina. They won the X Prize this year. We're so impressed with that team. And we just hope they get some funding and get into manufacturing. The guys at Fisker, the guys at Phoenix, all of these car companies have great ideas and a great product. We want them to be successful.
Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for this evening. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Why? Because you have a right to know. Until next time, so long, everybody.